Over the past, I don't know, 15 or 20 years or so, one of my favorite things to do around Christmas time has been to volunteer for the 61st Avenue United Methodist Church Last Chance Toy Store. It's called the Last Chance because it really serves those who have not been served by any other program in the city. It comes very near to Christmas, and the Marines and the Toys for Tots and many, many other contributors come together to bring toys that are stored there at the church, and then volunteers interview people to make sure they haven't been served by any of the other programs, and then serve as personal shoppers to guide them through so that they can find things for their children or grandchildren who would otherwise not have any presents for Christmas. Now, we don't have to worry about that, do we, in our families? But in those families, having not been served by any other program in the city, they will have presents under the tree that would not be there because of the folks who pool their efforts to make this happen. Now, sadly enough, 61st Avenue United Methodist is going to be closing down, except for the Spanish-speaking ministry that takes place there, which will be continuing. So I don't know what's going to happen with the toy store. But one of the gifts I give myself, since my birthday falls around that time, is that I get to go and help out with that. And even though I've served in several capacities, my favorite job is working the door. Because when you interview people, you get to meet a few. When you are a personal shopper, you get to meet a few. But when you work the door, you get to meet everybody. The folks come early in the morning. They get a number. They are assigned a time to return. They come back. They line up in that number. And a part of what we as the doorkeepers do is that we make sure they're lined up at the right time, in the right order, and we let a certain number in at a time so they can do their shopping. And while they wait, we get to visit. I get to hear stories about their lives. The gratitude is palpable for people who otherwise would not be able to share the joy of Christmas with their children or grandchildren, but are going to be able to because of what's going to take place once they get inside those doors. Whenever I hear what you heard read just a minute ago, I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of the Lord than to dwell in the tents of wickedness. I always have that image come to mind. Standing at the door, right at the edge, the verge of 61st Avenue United Methodist Church, welcoming God's people in. Now, we don't know exactly what that word doorkeeper means. It could mean something like a guardian, a gatekeeper. It could, on the other hand, simply mean those who stand between the outside and the inside, welcoming those inside who would otherwise be outside. I kind of like that. I like that image of the doorkeeper. The poet who put together this psalm intended for it to be sung, not read necessarily the way we did it, but to be sung by a group of pilgrims as they approached the temple, talking about how they longed to be in God's presence. That yearning that they were experiencing, just like the yearning you feel on a Sunday morning when you get up to be here, right? I bet some of you do. You're here, aren't you? There are two images that really are presiding through this entire poem. There are others, of course, but two are hugely significant, I think. The first is the image of a bird building a nest, coming home to the temple, home to God's presence, is like a bird building a nest, a sparrow or a swallow, feeding its young there. I know right under the eaves of our front porch, every year birds build nests. And of course, it's a nuisance to some extent. But the fascinating thing is we get to sit and watch as the chicks hatch, as the baby birds hatch, and then as they're being fed by their mother, and then as they fly away. to be in God's presence, to be surrounded by God's love, is coming home. It's that home we never knew we were yearning for. Because we don't like to admit how dependent we are. We are as dependent on God as those baby birds are dependent on their mother. But once we can admit that, that yearning for home, that yearning to be in God's presence and to receive whatever it is God would give us, draws us here. It's a homesickness for the love of God. Often, when I'm with a family who has a family member who is very sick, near death, or who has just died, a part of the prayer that I pray uses the words, "Oh God, we know that your love is our home in this world and the next. Your love is our home now and forever." I think that captures something of what the psalmist is trying to say. That God's love is our home, and while we know it here in our bodies, it doesn't end when we no longer are encumbered by these bodies. We just experience that love in a different, we believe, deeper, more intimate way. So our home is not a place, because God's love is in every place, is everywhere. We just come here to be reminded that that is our home. So when we go from this place, we can find it wherever we are, wherever we go. We see God's love manifested in other people, in other places, perhaps in almost every occasion of life. Now, the second image that I find really powerful in this poem is that of refreshment. The rain falling, the springs coming up out of the ground, the pathways to Zion that run straight through the heart. And when we come straight through the heart, we are refreshed by God's presence. If you've ever lived or even traveled through a desert region, whether in the Middle East or in this country or elsewhere, you know how important water is. Water is not just another commodity. It is the very source of life. You cannot live without it. It is our source of life. It is also our form of refreshment. So as we come into God's presence, we recognize this is what we need for life. We've been homesick for this kind of life. And we go away refreshed by having been in God's presence. I think this is the feeling that the psalmist is trying to describe in poetic imagery. That yearning we have for something that sometimes we can't even name. And yet when we find it, we know how hungry we've been for it. Hungry for home. Hungry for love. Admitting how dependent we are on God's love and presence. And thereby being refreshed. Thereby finding what it takes for us to actually have life. In a few minutes, Chris is going to invite you to this table. But you know, it's not Chris's table. And it's not my table. It's not the table of anybody up here. It's not West End United Methodist Church's table. It is Christ's table. He is the host. We just act on his behalf to be sure folks are invited. Those who are hungry, come and eat. Those who are thirsty, come and be refreshed. When I am presiding, I always go a little bit off script, you know? And that doesn't surprise anybody, does it? And in going off script, I improvise part of that invitation. Because I want to make sure everybody knows that they are indeed invited. And I will tell you, you don't have to be United Methodist. I will tell you, you don't have to be a baptized Christian. And some of my colleagues have questioned me about that, thinking that somehow I don't hold Holy Communion as being quite as holy if you just invite anyone. But I know that throughout the history of the church, there have been traditions that specifically said that if you're not a member of our tradition, you are not welcome at the table. If you're not baptized the way we baptize, you're not welcome at the table. And there may be people sitting in this congregation at any given time who grew up in that tradition and may not be sure whether or not they are invited. I want to be sure that you know. The only requirement is, if you're hungry, come get food. If you are thirsty, come and partake of this juice, of this drink. You see, the reason I do that is that Jesus never made it a requirement for people to be baptized for them to eat with him. In the feeding of the 5,000, when his disciples come to him and say, "These people are hungry, you better send them away," he doesn't say, "You feed the ones who are baptized." No, he says, "You feed them. And everyone there is fed, and there is plenty left over." And around the table, that meal that we'll be remembering in a few minutes, those folks may have been baptized, but there is no point made of that as a requirement to sit at that table. Because remember, one of them had already betrayed him. One was going to deny knowing him, and the rest were going to desert him. If you are looking for a new or a renewed relationship with God and your neighbor, you are welcome to come and take this holy sacrament to your comfort. If you are hungry, you are welcome to come and eat. If you are thirsty, you are welcome to come and drink. If you are homesick, you're home. And God is providing what we need. God is providing what we need for life. God is providing what we need for refreshment. And God is providing us a way of knowing that God's love is our home now and forever. And of seeing that love not just in this place, but because we have seen it in this place, being able to see it elsewhere as well. All who are hungry, come and eat. All who are thirsty, come and drink. Thanks be to God.